to people and other animals, you know, such as livestock. Many of the wasps that are used for commercial biocontrol are in the superfamily Chalcidoidea, like Pteromallids, Muscidorhex raptor. I am working with a Proctotrupoid parasitoid that's in the family Diaprini, and that's in Diaprini, and it's considered kind of a junk group because a lot of these parasitoids don't really fit any other phylogenetic group. So a little back history on the insect of interest that I'm talking about today. Trichopria nigra was brought to the United States by this gentleman, Dr. Roger Moon from the University of Minnesota, from two sample sites, one that was in Russia and one that was in Kazakhstan. It's a gregarious endoparasitoid, and what's unusual about it is even though it's an endoparasitoid, it actually has a pretty wide host range. Most endoparasitoid wasps have a narrow host range because they're very endocrinologically tied to their host, and they develop inside their host and require a lot of host hormones to develop. Well, this parasitoid has at least half a dozen, if not more, potential hosts that we can rear it on. And among those, I'm sure a lot of you recognize the flesh fly and the stable fly. We also have the house fly, the face fly, the horn fly. You know, in short, a lot of common pest flies that we have to deal with in controlling. And that's what makes this insect really interesting in my research. What we also know about parasitoids is that, like a lot of insects, they have a great potential to learn and to change their behavior based on what they're exposed to. And especially with parasitoids of herbivorous hosts, we've learned a lot about olfactory behavior and modifying that behavior. And some of you may have heard of Hopkins' host selection principle, and for those of you that haven't, it's this idea that was brought about looking at plant parasitoids, that the host that you develop in sort of sets the stage for what you choose when you're an adult insect, because of those chemicals that you're first exposed to. We also know that stimulus reward learning is very commonly used and is very successful with a lot of insects. And there are quite a few examples in the literature of parasitoids that are conditioned to respond to both natural odors and artificial ones, such as, you know, the chemical vanillin. So what I wanted to look at with this insect that very little is known about is, does T. niger have a preference for a particular host species in this huge milieu of potential hosts? And can we condition this insect to prefer a certain host? Because that would just increase its potential as a biocontrol agent and make it a lot more marketable and helpful with medical and veterinary pest flies. And I was also wondering if rearing this parasitoid on different hosts, because it has a wide host range, has an effect on its adult host choice, going back to Hopkins' host selection principle. So I conducted two different kinds of experiments. One was an arena experiment, and one was a Y-tube olfactometer experiment. And in both of these experiments, I looked at timed exposure to different hosts and rearing on multiple hosts. And with the Y-tube olfactometer experiment, I was also curious as to whether or not the age of the insect would affect its host choice. So do younger parasitoids seek out hosts in a Y-tube olfactometer more strongly than, say, older parasitoids? Looking at timed exposure to hosts, my first arena assays using these awesome Gladware containers, I took three-day-old Trichopria nigra that had been separated from their host pupae and put on fresh pupae for 3 days, and I exposed them to one of two different hosts, and I'll talk about them in a minute. I had four treatments. We have, I'm not sure if I have a pointer, pupae of Sarcophaga bulata, the flesh fly, Musca domestica, the house fly, and Stomoxys calcitrans, the stable fly, as well as a blank, which is our control. I used these little petri plates, and I filled each of them with 2 grams of host. And I gave these parasitoids 2 hours to make a choice as to which host they wanted. I used a randomized block design to control for any outside influences. And there were about 400 parasitoids in each group. And I looked at both male and female parasitoids, but I analyzed them separately. Like I said, I performed an arcsine transformation because we wanted to look at different proportions rather than raw numbers. I analyzed those using a Tukey's mean separations test, and then I looked at the conditioned versus the unconditioned parasitoids with a one-way analysis of variance. And what I found was that after 3 days of exposure and then placement into this arena where they were given multiple choices, that there were significant differences in which hosts the different groups chose. For example, those parasitoids that were conditioned to housefly pupae significantly went more strongly to housefly pupae in an open container when given several choices. I found that while there was the greatest number of parasitoids in each plate that had the same host that they were conditioned on originally, the numbers weren't great enough to be that significant. Although I will point out that with the flesh fly, with Espalata there on the bottom and in the very right, that the p-value was so close that I think that it actually is significant but incidental. And I just want to point out that with the male parasitoids, we didn't see any significant differences in choices made by different exposure conditions. So male parasitoids were not seemingly seeking out host pupae. And then I looked at rearing on multiple hosts to see if that had less or more of an influence on host choice in these arenas. Again, I used 3-DLT Nigra, and I had two treatments. Those were reared on stable fly pupae, and those were reared on flesh fly pupae. I gave them, again, 2 hours to make a choice, and the sample size and the randomized block design were kept the same. We just have one fewer choice in these containers. The numbers of the parasitoids in each plate were separated, males and females, and I transformed them to look at proportions again. I averaged the repetitions for each treatment, and then I performed a mean separations test to look at significance. What I found was that 70% of those parasitoids that were conditioned to stable flies went to stable flies in this arena, and that 64% of those flesh fly conditioned parasitoids based on rearing went to flesh flies in an arena. And so these numbers were really strong and really promising. And as with the previous experiment, male parasitoids didn't exhibit any differences. But these results led me to wonder just how strong is this influence and how does it change over time and over exposure time. So, again, my results. I decided to conduct a slightly different variation on this host choice experiment using a Y-tube olfactometer. And for those of you that haven't seen these before, an olfactometer is an interesting piece of equipment that utilizes airflow to bring certain olfactory stimuli toward an organism, usually insects, and allows them to make a choice by going down one of two or three or many different arms. I wanted to test for the age of the parasitoid when it had to make a choice, previous exposure to a host when it was allowed to make a choice, and rearing on a host. And I had 5 females in gelatin capsules that I introduced to the olfactometer and gave them 3 minutes to make a choice. And a choice was defined as going halfway down one of the arms of the olfactometer. I had 4 variations, one for exposure to hosts, one for variations in exposure time, one for rearing on two hosts, and one on the age of the parasitoid when no previous exposures there and choices are presented. And so this just goes through the different, variations of my 4 experiments. And I had quite a few replicates. And this is an example of the kind of data that I would get. And you can see that I summed the numbers for each of the arms of the olfactometer because when I did my statistical analysis, I used G tests for pairwise comparison. So I looked at total numbers that went into each arm of the olfactometer across all repetitions. And what I found was that certain factors were significant and many of them were not. Conditioning did make a difference. When looking at flesh fly and stable fly conditioned parasitoids, there was a difference between the two as far as their preference, and those that were conditioned to each different host species, and that had been for 48 hours, did prefer that host species. With host conditioning on the stable flies, there really wasn't any significant difference as far as time. 1-DL, 3-DL, and 5-DL parasitoids didn't have much of a difference at all in their strength of preference, how long it took and how many of them actually made that choice in that time. With the unconditioned parasitoids, there was a small leap, a small decrease. From day 1 to day 3, they preferred hosts more strongly, and from day 3 to day 5, there was a decrease in host choice, which leads me to believe that sometime in the first 3 days, they are the most competent to choose their host. Rearing on 2 different hosts provided a really strong preference to that host. So, to take away with you today, exposure to a host has a significant effect, and that is strengthened by rearing this parasitoid on different hosts, and that has huge implications, I think, for kind of tailor-making this parasitoid to be a biocontrol agent for many different fly species. I want to thank my laboratory, my committee, my lab technicians who were amazing in helping me count all these parasitoids through so many reps, and the USDA CMA facility in Gainesville, Florida for their time, funding, and laboratory space to conduct these experiments.
have time for one question on that. So
yes, sir.
Did you consider or try to control for differences in host size as part of your experiments?
Actually, yes, I did. And one of the experiments that I had conducted beforehand for my master's research was looking at the size and the fecundity of parasitoids that were reared on different hosts. I looked at Espalata and Escalcitrans raised parasitoids, and I found that there's a size difference, but as far as longevity, fecundity, and I guess just behavioral robustness, there really weren't that many differences.
Actually, before getting into the really sensationalistic and depressing stuff, I thought I might say something that's kind of an optimistic thing, which I think is a great thing. And many of you are probably aware of this already, but there's the Nature Conservancy has funded a project that's being facilitated by the National Center for Ecological Analysis and Synthesis, NCES, which is at UC Santa Barbara, and it's a project basically to quantify, it focuses on the impacts of non-indigenous insects and diseases in forest ecosystems. And basically what's going on through NCES, there are kind of two ways it's going. One is there's a distributed graduate seminar that's going on right now. Probably many of you are involved in this, where in the different universities, it's at several different universities, and they're focusing on different sort of model systems of insects and diseases and looking at the economics of those. The other thing that's going on is there are two NCES working groups. The one that I'm involved with, and I'll talk a little bit more here just as some brief preview of, is focusing on trying to come up with the overall valuation, economic valuation of the impacts of all non-indigenous forest pests. The other one, which is just starting, and I actually don't know too much about, but there's another one that's just starting on the interaction between climate change and forest pest invasions.